Here it comes again. Lunch. Will it be the same old, same old? Or are you ready to take a vacation from the ordinary with the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub at Firehouse Subs? Freshly sliced smoked turkey breast, craveably sweet mustard sauce, and a hint of Caribbean seasoning. Just $5.55 for a medium. Save time. Order the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub on the Firehouse Subs app. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations, limited time only, plus tax. Prices may vary for delivery.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
So, Chris, the dirty secret is Game of Thrones hasn't been good in 3 years.
I've never watched Game of Thrones.
Okay. There are certain...
I'm not trying to no-sell you this, but no. I thought you knew that I never watched Game of Thrones.
It didn't matter. It was just a statement I was going to say. So all you angry fanboys can eat it.
I watched Lost back in the day, and I actually credit the failure of season 6 of Lost in a large amount of my jadedness towards television generally. Like, that burned out so much inside of me to have season 5 end in such a fun way and to not be paid off or to get the most generic resolution arc you possibly could when they had all the time in the world to write something satisfying. So I definitely feel for the Game of Thrones fans.
I never watched Lost. I had a roommate who got angry as he spent so much time investing in it, and as it got worse.
That's what got me into podcasting, actually. Mm. Lost had a big podcasting online network back in the day, and there was this website called TalkShoe, where Lost podcasts existed. Yeah, and that is when I was like, oh, podcasts, and this is the place you could go, and you could go on other people's podcasts real easy, because, you know, everyone was just like, call into my podcast on TalkShoe, because they were happy to have anyone listening and anyone to discuss Lost with, and that is where I got my early chops.
Yeah, they're, and another truism about television that I will just put out there that is false. Season 2 of The Wire, not the weakest season. Season 5 of The Wire is the weakest. Season 2 is underrated.
And yeah, I don't think season 2 is all that bad.
Yeah, well, I think people just didn't like the fact that it was...
Season 1 is so strong.
White.
Oh, interesting. No, I don't think that's the issue. I think that season 1 is such a self-contained narrative that it was going to be very hard to follow it up. So at the time, the critical reception to season 2 was, oh, this isn't as good as season 1. And that's fair to say. It's fair to say that season 2 isn't as good as season 1. Season 1 is such a tightly wound little narrative.
Yeah.
But then when you start stacking it up against the rest of the series, it looks a lot better. But critics don't write about the series like that, so you still see all of this bad press floating out there from back in the day about season 2. But that's because those same critics don't stop and take a look at after season 4. I want to say season 4. Is that the one? Season 4 is where they were burying all the bodies in the apartments, right?
Yeah.
Okay, no, I like that one. That's a fun one.
Yeah, season 5 is the one five, where they have the serial killer story, and it's, you know, it's just...
Oh, right, and they're in the schools, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't a decent amount... Yeah, I found that one to be the
weakest.
Well,
no. Actually, four, they're in the schools more than
4's in the schools. Okay. 5 is the newspaper?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I found this newspaper one to be the least compelling.
Yeah.
If you're ranking out The Wire by seasons, I think it's probably... Well, it's season 1. And then it's probably season 4, then season 2, then season 3 for me.
And then season 5 last?
Yeah.
Okay. I'd probably go... See, I really like 2 a lot, just as a story. 1 is definitely the best, but...
No, 2's cool. I mean, the father and son dynamic is really fun in season 2.
Yeah. It's more probably my neighborhood and probably why I have such an affinity for it, but... We're here to talk wrestling because Chris has decided to make a special guest star appearance on Tuesday because we had Money in the Bank on Sunday.
I watched like 2/3 of the product. I figured I have at least qualified to weigh in on this, and you can just fill me in on SmackDown.
Okay. You know what? Where do we want to start first? Do we want to start with the pay-per-view?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
The overall story of the pay-per-view for me was, it was good wrestling, but the logic of the moves made no sense. So I've been hearing a lot of reviews that really liked the pay-per-view because they liked the matches. But there were things that, as a television viewer, if you were watching this, should make you angry. I think people are giving it a pass because it was a noble in-ring effort, and they've just come to accept that you have to turn your brain off for logic and storytelling in some things. I'll give you an example. We had 3 matches in a row where the referees made mistakes, one of which I think was on purpose as part of the story, and it led to absolutely nothing.
I found that to be really jarring. I was waiting for them to follow up on that on Monday, and the fact that that didn't come up. Did that come up at all on SmackDown?
Nope, not at all.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, and I think they're trying to say, well, you know, in a sporting event, people yell at their TV when referees make a bad mistake.
So now the refs are wild cards as well.
Well, no, because the refs are non-player characters who don't even get names or anything like that, or have, you know, different refereeing styles.
Well, but there's
anything,
like, you know, ref bumping and that sort of thing. But the fact that they're gonna just blow counts like this in this way, it's weird.
They blew counts. They said that they blew a count in that cage match, the Miz Shane match.
But then that was implied to be deliberative, right?
Yes.
Like the referee did that because he was afraid of losing his job, and there was no follow up on that at all.
No, and that's the thing. These are the types of things that, as a television viewer, makes me want this product to be richer. And it's one of those things where I'm just going, I thought for sure after the third time they were going to back off the bid a bit. They're going to have a few matches which were down the middle, clean, and all that other stuff. And then in either a main event or something else, the officiating would come into play. And then it would have been a episode-long type of story type thing. But nothing was brought about of it. Also not brought about on Monday night's Raw. Why isn't anybody angry that Brock Lesnar was allowed to come down there and win? I thought the Twitter reaction of, oh, these guys bust their hump and then Brock just gets to come down and take the briefcase. Okay, that's valid. But if you're analyzing it as a, how do I put this? If you're more concerned about, you know, the employment and the behind the scenes machinations of professional wrestling, but as a television product, I want to know why these characters were entered into a match and then management can all of a sudden just throw whoever they want to come down there and win.
Yeah, I found the Brock Lesnar thing. I mean, are we going to just talk about that right now?
Yeah.
I think it's a big mistake, right? To put the Money in the Bank contract back on Brock. The whole point of getting the belt off of Brock was to pull him out of the picture, and also, ideally, to do a heat transfer from Brock Lesnar to whomever has the belt. Now what you have is a giant looming cloud, presumably for Kofi Kingston. I think where this ends up is Brock Lesnar ends up defeating Kofi Kingston at some point. And I think that that's not going to help Brock Lesnar at all, and it's going to hurt Kofi Kingston, or even worse, Brock Lesnar goes and gets the belt off of Seth Rollins.
Well, if Brock was going to cash in, and they're doing this whole he's going to announce Monday, I believe, who he's going to cash in, not where, but if Kofi was the plan, tonight was the night to cash in, because Dolph Ziggler made his return, gave a hellacious beating to Kofi Kingston, stretchered him out, and then cut one of the worst promos I've ever heard later in the show. Oh my God.
Bad was it?
Well, okay, here we go. Heyman came out to distract Kofi with the thought that Brock might be there tonight. Dolph comes in, beats the hell out of him. As I'm watching this, I'm going, this isn't just a normal beating. This was a stretcher job, which I liked. I liked the viciousness of it.
Except that he'll probably be back next week.
That too. Yeah, no, throwing pancakes and doing whatever. But as I'm watching this, I'm going, you know what? If he cuts a good promo, He's born again in this company. And he comes out and he has this voice like he's broken up, like he's almost ready to cry. And his promo is all about how it should have been me in the Money in the Bank, because when Ali got hurt, they put Kofi in and he jumped through hoops, but it should have been me. It should have been me. It should have been me. I don't mind that as a premise of a promo, but he never got to the point of why does this matter to him? What, he never personalized it. It was that whining, I got looked over again. I should have been the one here. I didn't, you know, that, and it was that kind of tonation in it. And I was just like, oh, this is the wrong beat they're playing here. They should have done it as, if they're going to make it as I should have been the one in the Money in the Bank match, it's like, hey, where was my phone call to go into the match? You know what? I was sitting at home resting after leaving here after the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, I almost think it should have been me is much more meta. I think the issue here is that they made it so much about the Money in the Bank thing. Mm-hmm. I think for Dolph Ziggler, this whole thing of putting in 11 years of hard work and everything and it finally paying off and you being this undersized guy who's constantly being overlooked and you go out and you try your ass off and you really try to connect with the fans and the fans get you over, but they always kind of put the cap on you because they don't quite see you as this guy. Like, a lot of Kofi Kingston's story ports onto Dolph Ziggler, and I think Dolph Ziggler could do that and repackage all of that in a heelish way and say, all of this good fortune that's happening to Kofi Kingston, it should be happening to me. I should be the person having the big WrestleMania moment.
My problem with it is he's coming off as not self-loathing, but having a pity party in front of like people when he should have said, look, I gave him that kind of beating because I wanted that phone call and I wanted them to, you know what, I wanted more anger, and they don't do that kind of heat. This is such a weird, I need you to watch this and let me know what you think. Just the promo part.
Okay, sure. No, I'll follow up with you on Thursday on it.
Yeah, and no, there was a nice parallel too, because I was thinking, man, if you really want to go in depth, because Big E made his return to a live SmackDown wearing a knee brace. He's not going to be able to compete for a while, obviously, but he was there. And then they did a backstage vignette with, where they knocked him out of the match so that he couldn't accompany Kofi in his match against Sami Zayn. And if you remember, Dolph and Big E used to be aligned with one another.
Right, yeah, absolutely, sure.
I thought that would have been a nice parallel there, but it was, you know, they're focusing more on the Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn part of it. But, yeah, for SmackDown, that happened. Ali beat Andrade, which is kind of odd because they've been building up Andrade for the Finn Balor match in Saudi Arabia. And that was what most of the commentary was about, was Andrade's going to have to face the Demon. And, you know, and then that happened. And then Bayley and Becky teamed up to face Lacey Evans and Charlotte. But, of course, because champions have to be alpha dogs at all time, Becky and Bayley are bickering right before the match, and then after they win, right after the match. You know, because Becky wants her two belts back.
Right, sure.
But going back to Money in the Bank, I thought because it opened the show, other than the SmackDown tag team title match, even though it was a non-title match where the Usos beat Daniel Bryan and Eric Rowan, which, interesting. I thought the women's Money in the Bank over-delivered. I thought it was pretty darn good. After the few contrived, it's my ladder, no, it's my ladder spots, I thought overall the match itself wasn't that bad. I thought Dana Brooke did better than I ever thought she was going to. I thought Bayley was the real workhorse of this, as I thought she'd be. And there were a couple of amazing spots in there. The only thing that didn't register with me too much was the Carmella faking an injury, maybe not faking an injury spot, because it seemed a little bit too real. before then coming down and trying to climb up the ladder. I was like, man, if that was a work, I bid on it. But Bayley winning your Money in the Bank briefcase, that came as a shock to me. I didn't see it coming.
I have to admit, I didn't see it coming either. I was a bit surprised that they went with Bailey. But then again, I was also surprised that we were taking off one of the belts from Becky this soon. So a lot of the way this played out for me was a bit of a surprise.
Well, we'll go into those matches then. Becky Lynch does beat Lacey Evans.
Great match for Lacey Evans. She looks really, really sharp. I thought she looked great here. This is a real coming out party for her. We've talked about her, and I've liked her, and I definitely seen something in her, but she's clearly put some more things together, and this was a nice long match. Becky kind of guided her at various points, but Lacey very much did her.
Becky was screaming at her at a few points. Like, it fell off the cliff a little bit towards the end. Because Becky is just screaming spots at her to do. But overall, I thought Lacey, you know, at least for the first few minutes.
The execution. Yeah. No, the move execution was good. I mean, she still has that thing that happens when you're a WWE-only person in the ring where you just never really learn wrestling instincts. You learn at best, at most, WWE instincts. And Becky has wrestling instincts because she's worked in other places in the world.
Yeah, and then right after that match, Charlotte comes out to say, "Hey, our match is next." They wrestle for a bit.
Did they pay off at all the whole gimmick of why Charlotte was able to pull the strings to get this match right then and there?
No. Made absolutely no sense other than...
Okay, cool. No, I thought I'd ask.
It's you know what's odd? And here's the thing, I thought they were going to pay that off along with the Brock thing. And basically turn Triple H heel since he's in charge for the night backstage. Because that's the only explanation there is for either of those things happening. But they never paid that off. Charlotte beats Becky Lynch for the SmackDown Women's title after Lacey Evans comes back, hits her with the women's right. You know, so that feud's going to continue. Becky takes it out on Charlotte, beats her up a bit. Bailey comes down, has a moment of, should I cash in? Should I not cash in? I swear to God, when she decided...
Shouldn't I on Charlotte?
Yes.
Like, what would be the hesitation moment for
Bailey?
Well,
she's a good guy, and that would be taking advantage of a situation, Chris.
It would be one thing if it was cashing in on Becky. That would be, it also would have been much more emotionally intriguing. This is pretty clear. This is pretty cut and dry. Charlotte's not a great person and has not been a great person to Bailey, at least not in recent vintage. And Bailey should just go ahead and get this belt.
They take out of canon that the person who is the champ has to be on their feet. It kind of comes and goes. It has now gone away again. Bailey drags the body out, and I swear when she went to the top rope, I go, she's going to lose this match.
I had a feeling she was going to lose the match.
I thought they were going to make her the biggest geek ever and maybe just try and do a build her up from scratch.
I know. I was thinking Lacey Evans was going to come in and make the save and cost Bailey the cash in.
Or just make it null and void. I could have seen that too, but I just thought, man, she's not. And then they gave her the title, and she came off like a superstar in the post-game celebration. I think her promo on SmackDown tonight, they're hitting the wrong beats. They know what they want, but they're hitting the wrong beats because she kind of came out and goes, I'm past hugging now. I'm a fighting champion type of promo.
Does she have a new theme song?
No.
Okay, so then she can't be saying that.
Exactly. And of course, right before a big tag match, Becky has to say, yeah, I'm coming for your belt. Oh, okay, I hope you do. You know, that kind of the AJ Seth Rollins type of thing that they were doing before their match. It's just like, can we lay off the alpha dog and just be friends and happy for each other, even though it might be in the worst of situations? I understand Becky wants her belt back, but this is where money would be a great motivator for people to put aside their differences and win the tag match first before they go back to bickering. We'll get to that when we get to this 24/7 belt, which I just, I don't understand.
It's a wild card belt. What's not to understand?
We'll get into it.
Take a wild card, turn it into a belt.
Table it. Table.
Okay. You know, table means different things in different countries.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It does.
What does it mean in this country?
Well, it means to not do it.
Right.
Okay.
Rey Mysterio defeated Samoa Joe in a minute and 40 seconds.
But a fun minute and 40 seconds. Come on now. Oh, that senton where he crushes Joe's nose made the rest of the sequence that followed so fun.
Here's what WWE needs to learn, because the story of this is they went home early because of the blood. Joe does this in almost every match now. His nose is putty. It's going to bleed. Make it part of his character where he's a badass working through it. But no, they did. They put the belt on Rey, which doesn't need it. And we're once again delaying.
The problem was that finish,
we're delaying
the, right?
We're delaying
that finish was really stupid.
The finish was dumb. Shoulders were up. They called him out on the ref thing. And then we still haven't really figured out what the hell we're doing with Dominic. So,
yes. The beatdown was fun, though. The Uranagis afterwards were sweet.
Oh, yeah. No, Joe's great, and Joe's promo.
I know. See, that's the thing. Is like, this is bad, but Joe makes even all of this bad writing still good. And I thought Rey, for his part, was fine. I just, dumb finish, and that's not their fault. They didn't come up with this bizarre ref spot. That's just what they were handed.
Joe's promo might be the best thing on either show this week. Because yeah. His promo was about Rey being a man of honor, and you wouldn't want Dominic to not think you're a man of honor. And it was great. It was great stuff. Shane defeated The Miz by escaping the cage via.
Oh, this was so
off.
Bad. This was so bad.
Less said, the better. I think. I just don't understand. I don't understand.
Look, The Miz
Super
is
Shane.
Fine. The Miz is fine as a face, but what he needs is a heel who is a gifted hand, because The Miz is not super skilled in the ring, but can connect with the crowd, is a good baby face. He knows his gimmick. He knows how to work their style. He just needs someone like Cesaro could get good like heel face matches out of The Miz. But Shane McMahon is so like not good at wrestling that these matches die these long agonizing deaths.
I didn't even care about the match so much as I don't understand why Shane has to be this powerful on TV. I don't get it. I get that he's probably the authority figure of note on both shows now. He's hiring his team of hired goons who will be the corporation. But he himself, the joy of watching wrestler versus manager type characters is to watch the manager get his butt kicked because he's not as skilled as the professional wrestler. The thing that the WWE did was they started putting McMahon's over trained talent, and now the thinking is, and the thinking's always been with Shane, that Shane is giving the other guy the rub. This is what they thought with the AJ Styles match at WrestleMania. This is what they thought with Kevin Owens. This is what they
probably what they thought
the
with The Miz. Yeah.
Yes. It's amazing to me that they think this, but.
But you know, just to plug the Patreon real quick, since you kind of brought up the wrestler versus manager dynamic, one of the matches we talked about on the Andy Kaufman episode is Jerry Lawler versus
Andy Kaufman. Or yeah, but even
and,
Jimmy
Andy
Hart.
Kaufman and Jimmy Hart, they're both in the ring at the same time, and like the power dynamic that's implied is something like one Jerry Lawler punch is worth, I don't know, like 7 or 8 Andy Kaufman and Jimmy Hart style punches. Like, and so as such, Jimmy and Andy have to work together and try to gang up on Jerry Lawler, which doesn't necessarily work out for them. But like, that's the problem here with Shane. The idea that Shane can hang with The Miz, it's kind of nuts. And then there was that weird little referee spot, too, that they also added into this match, in addition to the weird t-shirt comes off finish.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where
all of this stuff so overcooked.
If it was legit, don't bring it up. If it's not legit, have a payoff for it. That's all I care about. You know, if it was the ref literally screwing up, then Vince is in somebody's head yelling, complain about that because he's angry about it. And that's not a good thing, because if it's said on TV, it's usually said for a reason. This isn't sports. This is wrestling. Okay, it's a worked, simulated sports thing. Everything should happen for a reason. Yeah. Tony Nese defeated Aria Davari.
I had a real problem with Tony Nese kicking out of that really brutal Aria Davari combination of his frog splash combined with the Rainmaker style clothesline. Like, he did all three of his finishing moves to Tony Nese in succession. And they all looked super clean, and I just thought him Nese kicking out of all those spots really buried Aria Davari. I mean not buried, you know, what's burying at this point, but like, that should have been a finishing combination for Davari.
I think it was to try to get this match over, more over than it should have been.
Yeah, and that didn't work,
because
right?
This is how WWE builds drama, and we'll get into this with the Seth Rollins-AJ Styles match as well. Kicking out of finishers is the drama now, not the beatdown leading into the pin. Kicking out of another guy's finisher is the way to get the crowd excited now. And it's really kind of hurt match layout in many, many ways.
Yeah, layouts, I mean, the problem with layout is that they don't think about, you know, how are you bringing stuff inside and outside of the ring? How do you make joint work and that sort of stuff interesting? And this is really on the main roster, because it feels like on NXT, they're actually pretty mm-hmm. decent at working some of those different layouts. But on the main roster, it's just not happening. And I agree with you. This became, you do a whole series of moves, I'll kick out of it. I'll do a whole series of moves, you'll kick out of it, and then eventually we went home with Tony Nese winning, and this very boring Tony Nese title reign will continue.
Yes. Roman Reigns defeated Elias, 10 seconds, fine with this.
Yeah, that's fine.
Seth Rollins defeated AJ Styles. Again, I liked the match overall. I did. The build was bad. The build to this match was god-awful for what they delivered. And you know, it's another thing where the drama is, again, in guys kicking out of each other's finishers. It's one of those things where I'm just like, I understand it. It's now what modern WWE is. I just can't watch these matches anymore without waiting for the first finisher to be kicked out of.
Yes, or even the big signature move spot. I mean, you know, this did have some nice sequences, though. Like, for example,
very nice sequences.
Seth Rollins spicing up his superplex into the Falcon Arrow by turning it into a reverse superplex into a reverse Falcon Arrow. Well, not quite a reverse Falcon Arrow, but you know what I'm trying to say. Like, a variant of a move that looks like it would be the reversal of a Falcon Arrow. And I thought all of that was cool. You know, it's just, in certain ways, the WWE style really confines AJ Styles and Seth Rollins.
A bit. I mean, you know that there's that match, that All Japan or New Japan Dominion style match in them that they can do. And for me, you know what? You brought up the point I was going to bring up. I like that Seth Rollins mixes up his moveset a bit to be more big match in these title matches. But
still within the context of the WWF, you have five moves.
Yes.
Like, style. It's just like variants of those five moves. And like, that's cool. And I think more wrestlers should take a cue off of that.
Yeah. I would have, you know what, for what they were building, this needed to be a bit more grudgy. This needed to be a little bit more people punching
the heat,
each other.
Like, went
the
in
heat.
Reverse, right?
Yeah.
Like, this began with AJ Styles being like, I'm going to show you a mean streak.
Yeah.
And it ended with AJ Styles begrudgingly showing Seth Rollins respect. I
don't mind that
heat.
Part. I don't mind the respect part, but man, they need to do better on that, as opposed to Seth, you know, cockily holding the belt up, as opposed to, look, if the guy who's acting like a jerk puts his hand out, you can give that momentary lapse of, you know what, I'm not sure if you're on the up and up, but just shake the hand, as opposed to making him wait for a while. That's a babyface move, or that's a heel move to not shake a guy's hand like that. That was my problem with it. No, but like in the beginning, AJ was acting like a jerk. He was acting like a complete and total jerk. And then by the last week, it became a promo video about, hey, AJ gave Seth Rollins his first big match in Iowa, and wouldn't it be cool if the student beat the master? And I'm like, well, this isn't how this story started. And then the match was wrestled like the student or the master apprentice type of thing, and that was the entire commentary. And it was just like, well, that didn't fit. The story got disjointed about halfway through.
Then we had Kalisto, Graham Metalik, and Lindsay Dorado versus Lars Sullivan. This happened on Money in the Bank and also on Raw. I will say, I actually liked the way the Raw one was sequenced out and thought that that would have been perfectly fine as the Money in the Bank spot, but this Money in the Bank spot was borderline offensive on some level. It also just ridiculous because I don't really think this is helping Lars Sullivan.
I kind of went into this a bit on Raw. I had a live thought about it. And yes, I could hear the screams. I could hear the screams of many a politically astute person going, why is he wrestling the minorities right now?
Well, I mean, theoretically, Jeff, like Jeff, let's just throw this out there, right? Lars Sullivan definitely had that $100,000 fine a couple of weeks ago. So
oh,
the company's
the
company's acutely aware of this. This is top of mind because that fine is definitely real.
Here's how they build stars, and it's an utterly ridiculous way, but it goes for giants, but also the A-list guys that they like. The Roman Reigns, Triple H has been built like this, other people. They take their guy and they beat up multiple people with heft to them. Like, they'll come out and they'll destroy the Lucha House Party, which both destroys the Lucha House Party as a legitimate act, and also in many ways undermines the 205 Live division. They did this with Braun Strowman.
Yeah, because it does say, you know, it takes three or four of these cruiserweights to even stand in the ring with a heavyweight, which I think just puts too much of a class differential between them.
Yes, and with Roman Reigns and Triple H, they would go out there and usually beat the tag team champions by themselves. So it's just like, wait, two guys skilled at tag team wrestling can't beat one person? Screw that. What they should do, and this is my opinion, is just get it for giants, not for the Roman Reigns, you know, guys that you want to be the face of your company types that you're going to do this thing. The bodybuilder guys that Vince goes, oh my God, he could be the new face of our company. But for the real big freak show attractions like Lars and Braun, they should beat up nothing but local talent.
Right.
Beat up nothing but local talent.
This company can afford to overpay local talent too.
Finish my thought.
Okay. Here.
While they're building up the local talent, you build up the guy that they're going to face through wins against people with credible, and then you bring him in, and then you let the giant beat him. And then you just repeat the cycle with various people of various length or various rankings. Like the first guy he beats is Zack Ryder, but Zack Ryder's had a couple of wins here and there. And then he's beating up local talent while you're building up, say, Mustafa Ali, who gets a few quality wins. You throw him against the giant, he loses. Up until the point where you're going to put him against the world champion. That's all you need to do with a guy. It's not that hard. But instead what they do is they gut their entire mid-card to try and build the giant. And then when the giant goes cold, there's nothing for him to do except be like Braun Strowman.
Yeah, there's no heat transfer back out of Lars Sullivan. So these guys end up being heat sinks. And it's like, yeah, I mean, you fed the Lucha House Party to them and R-Truth, who you actually, you know, he was, you know, heated up fairly nicely not all that long ago. Mm-hmm. But now he kind of looks like a goober because he has been fed to Lars Sullivan over and over and over again. And they've done that, I think, with too many people in an effort to build up Lars. And I don't really know that they've fully gotten Lars to where they need him to be.
Well, they're taking it very slow because he came out to address people on Monday Charlie Caruso starts the interview, and then he doesn't say anything because the Lucha House Party are here to get beat up again. So they're doing that whole thing. They're built. This is what they consider a slow build.
I'm looking forward to this dress.
Like I said, I need a monocle and a pipe and a top hat. I want him to be like Mr. Hyde, but with Jekyll's brain. I think that'd be the best way to do it, but I think they're just going to go, I'm going to decimate the entire, you know, whatever. And then Kofi Kingston defeated Kevin Owens. Good match. Didn't feel like an important match, though.
Yeah. And it didn't really have that you betrayed us.
Feel.
No, it didn't. I found the throwing off the shoes thing to be kind of weird. Kofi was okay here. He wasn't amazing here. And there's supposed to be like a passionate thing going on here because Kevin Owens infiltrated the New Day. He basically played these guys. So there really should be some intensity to like really school this guy who played you. Like, you want to make a joke out of me? You think you can make a joke out of me? You think you can fool me? Well, and joke's on you. That sort of thing. And I didn't really get that out of Kofi Kingston.
I agree. If I die tomorrow, and if I do, that means I don't have to go to work on Thursday. If I die tomorrow, please give WWE my one main criticism of their entire product is that the actors have no emotional connection to the stories they're telling. Because, yeah, Kofi Kingston should be mad as hell at Kevin Owens. And he's not.
Have you ever been fooled by somebody in your life?
I still hold grudges. About
yeah,
people
right.
Who have
I know the
in
people
my
who
life.
Have. Yes, the people who have like actively deceived me to bring me injury. That sticks with you. Like,
ever
and
have
certainly,
a woman cheat on you? I'm still mad at that.
and you would certainly be salty about it if it was just 3 weeks ago. I imagine.
Yes. I just it's like all these. We come out and we give our lines. I'm going to face you here. I'm going to face you here. Slap, slap.
But it's across the board here, right? Like, we've discussed so many different matches now where it feels like they have different parts of different storylines, and it's as though the writing team is made up of, I don't know, let's say 20 or 30 people, and they're just grabbing little pieces of different storylines that they've seen on wrestling television in the past, and they don't necessarily know why all of those things are connected together. No one's actually creating a continuity and going like, well, the reason you do this sort of angle, like the reason you would do a Dolph Ziggler comes out and jumps Kofi Kingston and crushes his head angle is to set up X, Y, and Z and have
second
a plan for
thinking.
That.
It's second
right.
thinking, you know.
Exactly.
He does this. Why? But it's because
when
the
Kevin
show
Owens does this to the New Day, how does that make the New Day feel?
Well, it's because the showrunner has no interest in telling those stories. He just wants to get through this week of television, and we'll figure out something next week. And by the time next week comes, oh, that was last week. We need to focus on this week. That's him. The script for Raw was still being written when the show went to air.
How many times have you said that since I've been on this show? It feels like every other week nearly now.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. The other big announcement, well, actually, you know what? I'm going to go into a little personal news here. I was watching Money in the Bank while I was writing jokes, Chris, because I was ghostwriting for a member of the dais on, or I thought I was at first, for the Ric Flair roast. And then that person pulled out, or was not invited. And so I shifted over to another member of the dais. So I am working hard trying to get all these jokes written. And then Ric Flair on Monday, it's like, oh yeah, there's not going to be a roast. And I just went, that's just the perfect end after being angry at Money in the Bank and angry at Game of Thrones. I'm thinking... See, I'm torn on this because I thought about doing a Patreon episode where I just read the jokes I had already brainstormed. But the roast may happen in September, so I kind of have to keep these jokes for now.
Well, it's a shame. You've like now teased these jokes that we can't hear.
Yeah, I know. I just realized that as I said it. So,
can you give us one of these pearls?
No, because I want to keep them all in case I have to give them to
every
person.
Single one. You're going to hang on to every single one.
Oh, give, I have some I mean, bad
give,
ones.
Yeah, I'll give me you, a I'll shitty you, one. Let's I'll hear a one. Shitty one.
I'll give you one that won't make it. I think it was something like, so let's see, Rick, you have three kids that got into the wrestling business. Did you take parenting tips from Fritz von Erich? And then the tagline was going to be something like, oh, don't worry, only one of yours died. So I don't think that
God.
One would make it. See, that one wouldn't make it, that because that's too dark. It's
that's
too
kind
dark
of dark, yeah. It's, I mean, like, that is a roast. I mean, that's yeah. roast material, but man.
Yeah. No, but yeah. That was my kind of tonnage, and the person I was originally writing for could do that. And then the person that I ended up writing for, or I was going to give ideas to, doesn't want to be mean. And I'm just like, oh, God, no, don't do this to me. Don't make me have to write nice jokes. I want to write roast jokes.
He's so rich for roasting on that front. He has so many delightful foibles.
Yes, there's so many. I don't have my jokes handy. Otherwise, I'd give you another.
Well, no, I mean, I asked for one free one, and you gave me a free one, so that's all I can ask for. I mean, I could ask for more, but no, like, well, you fulfilled my request, so I'm not asking for more.
Again, I will do it for pay eventually behind the wall if this roast does not go off. And that way you make money off of my suffering.
There we go. That's fair. That's fair.
The 24/7 belt has been unveiled. And boy, what an unveiling it was. Mick Foley comes out, stammers through a speech, talking about how they're going to make Raw again, I guess.
Oh my God. Like, so, yes, the vague, oblique reference to Make America Great Again, which is something that neither side of the political divide is probably looking extremely forward to hearing referenced during Monday Night Raw, particularly not in the context of this belt. Like, unnecessary.
There was something about the third hour going to get a lot meaner. I was just like, well, okay, that's kind of intriguing if it's not a throwaway line. As long as it's not just about this 24/7 belt. Now, some context. The 24/7 rule was something done for comedy purposes on the hardcore title during the Attitude Era.
Sure.
It led to a lot of great comedy sketches, mostly because Crash Holly, an undersized wrestler, had the belt and was scared to death of getting beat.
And the Headbangers were really awesome foils for Crash Holly as well.
Yes.
The Headbangers did a lot of, like, really good work throughout those. I have some fond memories of those skits at the Adventureland or Chuck E. Cheese-style ballparks and that sort of thing, and Crash Holly was good at that. The airport one was fun. Crash Holly did a lot of really good work, but it
was reliant on him to get
right.
the belt over.
Right.
My problem with this is we've evolved in storytelling from the Attitude Era, or so I'd like to think.
I think that's kind of debatable.
I don't mind, it is for this company, but I don't mind comedy. As you know, Toru Yano, one of my favorite wrestlers, this kind of thing would be great with him. I want a reason why all these guys are fighting for this belt. And my solution, as I posted today, was just say that the holder of the title gets $250 an hour. And then maybe the person who's made the most money at the end of the year gets a real title shot. Or something. Give me a reason why I'm watching this wackiness that should be associated with Yakety Sax every time they're doing it. But give me a
why would you
why
want this
care.
Title belt?
Why
yeah,
would you
exactly.
Want this title? Why
I
would
have
they
no
want this title?
Yeah, it's just it's ugly for one. I mean, like the color scheme on this thing. Jeez,
and that
Louise.
That would also give a reason why some of the more high profile wrestlers wouldn't be interested in this title. Because it's not enough money for them to put out the effort to go after it. Hey, I'm a world
or
I'm a
it has
world
something
champion.
Or it has some bearing on their current title. Like you want the 24/7 title because it gives you
yes.
an opportunity to challenge for the United States title, the Intercontinental title, or even a tag team title belt if you can hold on to it for, I don't know, let's say 2 weeks.
Yeah, my thing was, just give this 24/7 belt to Brock and tell him and have him say, "I'll take all comers anytime. Come to my farm and leave." That's how they're gonna write off this belt, hopefully. I just don't want to see Robert Roode being scared of people. I think he has too much heft. It's embarrassing to watch. I don't mind like the Drake Maverick types coming out of the woodwork to go after it because he has nothing to do. But I mean, you watch this cast of characters going after this title, and it just screams geek. And I don't mind that so much, but I want to get. But it's like.
Well, this is a comedy arc with no payoff, and
yes,
that's the problem.
If there's a movie corollary, it's when they're having, you know, the fights in Django Unchained. I feel almost uncomfortable watching these people of a lower status going after a belt that doesn't mean anything just for corporate fealty's sake. Oh, look, guys, it's a title. In the WWE, you could call yourself a title holder in our company. Now be good little employees and go down there and kill yourself for this belt.
And what is the point of, you know, you're going to bring it down to NXT, you're going to bring it down to 205 Live, NXT UK. This belt's going to travel around all over the place like Robbie the Robot or something like that and get signed by all these different wrestlers. I don't see the point.
They should call this the Likes to Entertain Championship.
I still think they should just go wild card championship.
The wild card's too important to put on this title. Because the wild card is where the big stars use the rule. You put the wild card on this title.
Well, I mean, think about this, Jeff. Think about this. When you have the belt, you have wild card privileges. You are like one of the four. You're almost at the same status as one of the four people who are part of the wild card rule at any given point, because you're now holding the belt that allows you to warp between all the different brands, but only temporarily. So you are kind of a wild card. No, stop mmming at me. You start going, Come on, let's
I'm sitting here with my arms crossed, Chris. And
no,
I hear that.
I'm hearing that. I do radio. I know what's going on. So what else do we need to hit here?
Let's get some extraneous things from Raw. Ricochet loses to Cesaro.
That was so weird, although it was a good match, but it was all weird, and Cesaro's new music is better than his old music, but almost anything would be.
I had a cleanup point for the 24/7 title.
Sure.
Well, I think there might also be, I won't call it a more sinister motive behind this, but follow me on here, a more business corporate-minded thing on this. This is going to be used for the most part to get clicks to WWE.com,
mm-hmm.
Twitter, Facebook, all their social media platforms.
Oh, the title's being defended right now on Twitter. You can watch.
Yes. Now, why is this bad? Why is this duplicitous, so to speak? It's not that they don't. I mean, look, if it's an obvious clickbait type thing, that's fine. It gets social engagement up. But the WWE uses social engagement as a barometer during their stock meetings. So if they can get more clicks because of this 24/7 title and use this phony barometer of we're the most socially engaged company or we're more socially engaged than the NFL, et cetera, they can then go to their stockholders and use this as a phony barometer for how well the company's doing.
Man, well, we'll see. I hope investors are savvy and can kind of put that together, but that
that's
a little bit of a bank shot. But yeah, no, I mean, that's actually been WWE's problem in the past, is that they think they're being more clever than their investors, and their investors actually see through a decent amount of Vince's and Burial's plans.
Yeah, no, I just remember, I think it was one of the early stock meetings where they went, or like a Q1 where they said, we're the most socially engaged in company in the world or something like that, or socially engaged. And I'm like, that's not a real metric. That doesn't translate to business. That doesn't translate to cash money. It just means people are watching free stuff on social media. But yeah, back to Cesaro and Ricochet. It was a poorly told story. The story was that Ricochet's loss doesn't matter because he was in that Money in the Bank match and he got tricked by that evil Cesaro you know, because his pride got in the way of him, and he said, "I will take this match despite
right." Even though the
ladders.
The agency clearly falls on Ricochet. At a certain point, you have to know your own body. Can you go or can't you go? And there's no shame or dishonor in saying my back is hurt from the ladder spot. Which, oh by the way, you all just saw an instant replay here. So as you might imagine, I need an extra week and not an overnight before I can come in and wrestle. And instead, he's like, "No, I can go." And Cesaro exploits. That I have no real problem with Cesaro winning like this. It's not like super honorable. It's like it's shady in the sense of like, well, you challenged an injured guy, but then you also kind of have the mitigating circumstance of the injured guy accepted.
Well, but they didn't tell the story well. They just, you know, I have no problem with that as a story.
Yeah, and then they did these very, very nicely done spots. I mean, that's the thing. So then they come out and they start showing off how Cesaro and Ricochet
yes.
would work together. And Ricochet does that awesome spring off of Cesaro's shoulders.
Yeah,
it's great. But when you have a bad back, that's exactly not the type of spot you should be doing.
It's like, I'll go full speed, oh, my back. I'll go full speed, oh, my back. Because we don't want to deny the people the privilege of seeing Ricochet do what he does and why he's a big superstar and why we put the pew-pew sound during his entrance. But at the same time, we also want to convey...
It's because he's going out the walls, Jeff. Don't you understand?
We also want to convey that he's hurt. And my back after doing these amazing spring... It doesn't connect. If he came down there and had to be helped down to the ring in order to do the match, I'd believe it. And it would get heat on Cesaro. But not this way. This way was just, I'm clever and I'm going to trick you into getting in a match with me so that I win it. Oh, okay. And then he does. I just went, what the? This is, ah.
He's the one and only.
Now, did
also,
he come down
the one
this-
thing I want to say is, I remember on Raw, they go, well, from phenomenal to amazing, and that little line made me go, man, this company really relies too much on generic superlatives.
Yes. Because they don't... My favorite is the one for Finn Balor, because they don't emphasize the syllables right. It's the extraordinary man who does extraordinary things.
And which is also ridiculous, because the whole idea should be he's the ordinary man,
who does
extraordinary.
Yes.
That's
yes.
a dichotomy. You're trying to,
yes.
there's a thing happening there when he's extraordinary and he does extraordinary things. What he's supposed to do, Jeff.
Well, we can't make him ordinary because he's a WWE superstar.
But if he was an extraordinary man who does ordinary things, it's boring. It's like, here's Superman doing a puzzle.
Well, the problem is it's in print, so it's the same, so they never emphasize it correctly, so they always say the extraordinary man.
Because it's
man
the same word.
Extraordinary things. Yeah, exactly. As opposed to, they probably don't even do it on the script. They probably have extraordinary as one word and extraordinary on as one word, so they just read it straight. It's just, it's so dumb. But
at least the revival defeated the Usos. That was good.
Yeah, they stole one, and they never do that correct. And so this is going to be 50-50 for a while, and we're just going to have to deal with it. I liked the match.
I did like the match. Yeah, the match was fun. And again, I'm just glad that the revival actually won this. I would have liked it even more if they had won it clean, but I kind of get that because they don't want to necessarily blow off the Usos and revival feud that quickly either.
And at the risk of going too negative, I howled at Alexa taking her coffee down to the ring. I thought that was
very funny.
That was very funny. And Braun in his non-gimmick account making very flirtatious comments on her Instagram about, hey, you want some cream in that coffee? Or you want some sugar in that sugar? Or something like that. Some Southern colloquial... I laughed at that, but just the kind of the defeated look. That's me in every morning meeting before 10 a.m. I'm bringing my coffee with me. You can't make me not. I like that. I like what they've done with Nikki Cross over these past couple weeks. I think it's been an improvement. Although the lackey thing, it's cheap and it's kind of lazy at the same time, but I like that Nikki's getting a little bit of personality here.
Yeah, I like that she's getting a little bit of personality here. I actually kind of like the Nikki and Becky dynamic. I'd be interested in seeing that play out more.
Nikki and Becky.
Yeah, yeah. That could be fun.
Yeah, I like that too. The match, the six-person match wasn't anything to write home about, but...
No, the Iconics are still not really...
They're bad in the ring, but they're great outside of the ring.
I know, right. They're very entertaining. I know they're very entertaining outside the ring, but they are lousy inside the ring.
Well, Billy is...
Yes. No, right. Yeah. That's fair. It's mostly Billy's, you know, stinking it up in there.
Anyways, let's cut off there, Chris. Get your plugs in.
All right. Don't worry, .tv. Chris Novembrino at ChrisNovembrino on Twitter. The All in the Family podcast. Go and subscribe to it on iTunes, on Stitcher. Don't worry about the government on iTunes, on Stitcher. Jeff.
You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris at ChrisNovembrino. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. I'll have more jokes on the Twitter. This week I came close to quitting the show again, which is a bad thing.
Patreon.com/ShakeThemRopes.
There you go. Patreon.com/ShakeThemRopes, where Chris and I watch old wrestling that I howl and pop like mad for, and we both seem to really, really enjoy more than the current product.
Let's do that this weekend.
Okay, for as little as $1 a month, you can...
Support the show. Episodes. Yeah, you get bonus episodes and support Chris, the show. Yeah.
Although Chris now has more work, so I may have to start getting a cut of that cash. and remember, just as a personal note, Memorial Day is the sad one. Veterans Day is the congratulatory one. Activate.
Here it comes again, lunch. Will it be the same old, same old? Or are you ready to take a vacation from the ordinary with the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub at Firehouse Subs? Freshly sliced smoked turkey breast, craveably sweet mustard sauce, and a hint of Caribbean seasoning. Just $5.55 for a medium. Save time. Order the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub on the Firehouse Subs app. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations, limited time only, plus tax. Prices may vary for delivery.